Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
DMC, I think it is hilarious that they did this type of ranking voting where, like, you had to vote for someone who was, like, a minority person of color kind of I think you had 2 votes, and one of those votes had to go to someone that was considered a minority
of some sort.
Yeah, a minority of some sort.
Basically a diversity hire.
Yeah. And then they still ended up with the most, like, 2 basic whitest of white. Yeah, white guys. David Hogg being one of them.
That backfired.
Like, you do all of this, it's like it still didn't work out. So.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
And if this is your first time here, welcome. You have discovered your new favorite podcast. So I would suggest that you hit that follow button. I'm sure it's because a fabulous friend recommended you to listen to us. And so that alone merits a follow, okay? To maintain your friendship, because we'll tell on you if you don't follow. Anyways, what are we talking about today? We are going to talk. There's a lot of stuff that happened over the Easter weekend, which I hope everybody had a blessed and wonderful Easter holiday, Passover, all the things. And it kind of takes me a minute to reset after a holiday weekend. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was off. We were at church all week last week for different services, but it started in earnest really on Thursday. From Monday, Thursday, and then it rolled into Good Friday, Holy Saturday. We had tons of stuff, and I just was like, I don't have the brain space to flip-flop between, like, church service, hymns, worship, headlines. Like, I just couldn't. And so I just decided on Friday, I can't do this anymore. So it was, like, heavy on the Christian content on my Instagram account, but that's just the way it was. And then you come back on Monday, and you're like, how do I do this? I don't even know how to do my job. I don't know,
like,
what I'm
reset
doing.
Your brain. Yeah, I was gone last week to visit some friends, and then I came back and church and busy weekend. And then now yesterday I had to make this outline. And I was like, what happened?
Well, and the hard part is this is actually kind of a slow news day yesterday.
It was. Well,
in my opinion,
weekend,
almost
kind
makes
of.
It, yeah, it almost makes it worse because if you're forced to just hit the ground running, it's like, yep, let's go. You'll catch up. But if it's slow, you're kind of in limbo. Well, I'm waiting. What's happening? And there were things that happened over the weekend that were significant. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, and they got a little buried with the holiday weekend, honestly. Mm-hmm. They didn't make it into the news cycle, so to speak, not in full force. So we're going to talk about, what are we talking about today? We're talking about SCOTUS temporarily blocking deportations. And
in the dead of the night.
In the dead of the night. Alito has some thoughts on that. We're going to talk a little bit about the Margarita Summit in El Salvador. Yeah, I'm going to call it the Margarita Summit. I don't even know necessarily if they were drinking margaritas, obviously.
I don't really think that's the point. Some people are very, very literal. And they really want to point out when I said, oh, they were having, because Bukele was like, yeah, they're having margaritas. And I had so many people show up and they're like, those don't look like margaritas to me. I'm like, well, that's not the point, guys.
That's not the point.
It was kind of like the little jokey joke. People really get very literal.
I'm like, okay, calm down. And then I want to talk a little bit about someone who we have never really talked about because who cares?
Ooh, can't wait.
But David Hogg. And if you don't know who David Hogg is, according to Carville, he is a contemptible little twerp. So we're going to talk about.
Oh, I agree. I love Carville sometimes. The worst part about this hog kid is he flashed on the screen while I was watching the news doing a little work the other day. And one of my teens came in and it was actually a flattering picture of him. Like he was behind a desk and he had on a suit and tie. He brushed his hair. He looked
presentable.
And
yeah.
Yes. And one of my teens walked in and was like, oh, who's that? And I was like, nope, absolutely
you don't
not.
Care.
Don't even, he doesn't matter at all to you. Stop it. And they were like, whoa, mom, that was a response. I was like, it is. I have a visceral response to that child. And I made sure
denied.
My children understood. Yes. You will be shunned.
He's also a skinny, contemptible little twerp. And I
well,
mean,
but
that
was
something
from like the head up, and he does
yeah.
have a nice head of hair. So my kids are really big on the hair. They have a dad with luscious locks. So they've grown used to expecting that.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. All right. So before we get into today's episode, hit that follow button. And here's a reminder that if you don't want to be listening to those ads, click the link in the show notes and consider becoming a paying supporter where you get all kinds of bonuses, including ad-free episodes. All right, so let's get into this. SCOTUS on the 19th. So what was that? Like Friday night, like in
Saturday.
The night. Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was even over the weekend. Okay.
Yeah.
The ACLU filed an emergency appeal to the Supreme Court. So at this point, which is very rare, because typically the Supreme Court, especially this one, likes everything to kind of go through the appellate process and make its way up to the Supreme Court on its own. But the ACLU filed this emergency appeal claiming the administration was preparing to deport more alleged Trans-Nicaragua gang members without due process. And so the Supreme Court issued an overnight, like Saturday night, midnight, or I guess, was it Friday to Saturday or Saturday to Sunday?
I think it was
Friday to Saturday.
Because it happened at 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Temporarily blocking the Trump administration from deporting anyone under the Alien Enemies Act. So this would include TDA members, anyone who was MS-13, like anybody under the Alien Enemies Act.
Well, this has been the one mechanism that the Trump administration has at this point to mass deport, because we have millions of people in here that are here illegally.
Well, and let's also focus on what the goal of the Alien Enemies Act is. So it was kind of like a two-step process. So first step was designating these foreign gang members
as terrorists, basically.
Correct. And so that kind of created this more immediate threat. Yeah, almost a loophole. I think that's fair.
I don't like that word, but a designation.
Yes.
That it was an actual threat. So they could use this specific act to expel them, basically.
Well, because by making or designating individuals as terrorists, it gives the executive branch more power on like how to deal with them. I mean, think about the terrorist cells and Al-Qaeda and how, I mean, it wasn't awesome what happened with the Patriot Act and everything like that. But like those type of designations give the executive branch a little bit more power. And then on top of that.
Well, I was going to say, even some Republicans are warning Trump supporters or supporters of using the Alien Enemies Act, like, slow down. You don't love the Patriots Act. Look at what happened there and the fallout. After they implemented that, be careful with the Aliens Enemy. Gosh, that act name is so hard to say over and over. Alien Enemies Act. I'm not saying whether I agree with it or not, but there have been rumblings even within the Republican Party, like tread lightly. But I think that the Trump administration is seen as one of the only levers that they have to
right now. This. And I think one of the only reasons that it hasn't been like abused in a way is because of what happened and how it was used during World War II with the it is what led to the Japanese internment camps.
Yeah.
And so I think just the stigma of it when that happened has prevented any president from using it again until now.
I just want to stay away from it.
Yeah. Like, it was like politically not a great idea. And but you know, if someone is gonna touch the third rail, it's gonna be Trump. Let's be honest.
Yeah, for sure. And not just touch it, but sit on it or grab it and kiss it like he does with the American flag.
I know. Oh, my gosh. Sometimes it's like, Okay. So the court directed the government not to remove any members. What was interesting is that it specifically, like, the order was like the punitive class until further notice. First of all, there was a lot of discussion about the Democrats were like celebrating, oh, the Trump administration can't deport any. Again, this is the same situation as what we have had in the past. This is basically a TRO. This is a temporary hold. Yeah. And now let me also point out that the two dissenters on this order were Alito and Thomas. My guess is what's happening is that they're putting a pause on it right now while it works its way through the courts. So the talking point is that it's the concern that the Trump administration is not following the judicial orders to return, for example, Abrego Garcia to the United States. And there's this battle right now about what's facilitate mean versus returning mean, like how much, like the United States or the administration is saying, I guess they're kind of like carefully choosing what it means to facilitate. Honestly, I think the whole thing is, we've talked about this in the previous episode about how I think it's kind of like a ridiculous argument because it's not like he's going to go home to bed with his family. If he's not coming back, like the dude is not coming back into the United States. End of story. Right. I don't see that happening. So in regards to SCOTUS specifically, Alito then the following day was not happy.
No.
He had some very strong words. And so in his dissent, this part I thought was the most interesting, which was from Alito. It says, in sum, literally in the middle of the night, the court issued unprecedented and legally questionable relief without giving the lower courts a chance to rule, without hearing from the opposing party, within 8 hours of receiving the application, with dubious factual support for its order, and without providing any explanation for its order. The order is literally a paragraph, and it just basically says you have to stop. There is no reasoning. There's no explanation. The ACLU filed the emergency order. They immediately went in and gave this ruling. Also, this was Alito again. He said the papers before us, while alleging that the applicants were in imminent danger of removal, provided little concrete support for that allegation. So needless to say, he was not happy with that ruling. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, I don't know what this presents, because there's all this discussion and debate about constitutional crises. And so what happens here? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Save big on your next landscaping project at Menards. We make landscaping simple with our free, easy-to-use design program and step-by-step project guides. Plus, we have the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Save big on our 12-inch smooth patio blocks on sale now. Stop in to see our full selection and get your project started. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
When you have the Supreme Court, who has previously ruled that the Alien Enemies Act is lawful, who has previously ruled this is within the executive branch's powers. I mean, I guess it's a temporary order, but also at the same time, I don't know, like, how do you see how SCOTUS did this and how this went down?
It almost feels, and everybody wants to imagine that these justices are like these high and lofty, free-thinking, floating minds. I just feel like half of them are activists.
Yeah.
And even some that have been appointed by Republican presidents, I feel like they've really been a disappointment. And I don't want activist judges on either side of the bench, but I do want consistent minds that are wise and adhere to a very specific view of the Constitution, and that it's not this like living, movable kind of fluid
document. Yeah, where they
say
it's a living document that changes.
Yeah, I can't do that. And that's why I respect Justice Thomas so much. He's consistent. And you can hate that, and a lot of people do, but I know what I can count on. When I heard there was two dissenting voices,
you knew immediately who it was.
100%, 100% I knew who it was. And 100% I knew it was Thomas. I, like, guessed it's got to be Alito, but, like, you always know it's going to be Justice Thomas because he's so consistent. And so there's a part of me that just thinks, like, they're nervous. They've got this. So many people have criticized them in the last couple of years, saying that the institution is broken, that it needs to be reformed. We need more justices, blah, blah, blah. And I just think, man.
But
as far as them ruling in the middle of the night and pulling something like this, it feels off to me. It feels really like that branch of the government is not doing what it should be doing. It's not. Why are you doing it like this? If you can usurp the executive branch's power that you actually said they had within their power, and then just one night in the middle of the night, you just pull it back. I don't understand. If the president can't act according to the powers that the executive branch grants him, then what are we doing here?
Well, and I think the thing that makes me a little bit nervous about this is, and I'm not going to say the administration doesn't have any fault, because honestly,
no,
at this
I'm not
going
to say that either.
The administration, I don't understand. And I was talking about this with my husband. I'm like, you could have saved yourself a whole bunch of grief if you wouldn't have been so prideful, because you don't even have to look, honestly, you don't necessarily even have to bring him back to the United States to remove his withholding. This withholding removal like order, which is what was preventing him from getting deported to El Salvador. He has legal representation. He could zoom in and watch it. Do you understand what I'm saying? You could have this hearing. You could have this entire situation worked out. Because you can make the argument the gang doesn't even exist anymore. The threat is not in El Salvador anymore. It's not like they don't have the argument on their side, and they would have prevented a lot of this drama, which is frankly frustrating and really disappointing. And I think it is an example of how the administration is just being, which I get, you don't want it. This is the problem of like when a previous administration has been adversarial and weaponized the judicial process. Like you just don't want to.
Yeah.
And then you end up with someone who frankly is prideful. Like you don't want to give them a foot. Do you know what I mean? Or an inch or whatever. Yeah. So it is concerning to me, however, that the Supreme Court has done something that is very out of character for the Supreme Court. Yeah. And to me, my question is this a sign of them being nervous because politically of how things have panned out against the Supreme Court, especially remember with the overturning of Roe versus Wade and that opinion getting leaked and you had people threatening them. You clearly have a rise of threat happening in the country right now. Like we've seen multiple
people. All the people that they were protesting at their house, inciting violence against some of the justices. It's just a new battlefield, really.
So my question is it partly that, or is it that in addition to, or is it possibly only they just are very concerned with what the administration is doing?
They would have said that.
That's
they
what
would have
I
handled
feel
the
like
last
too.
Ruling differently, so
you know what I mean.
I swear they're just humans, and they're nine of the most powerful humans. Well, I mean, but see, that's why we have three branches of government. We have checks on this. It's just the fact that I think all of the different branches of government need to tighten up the way they're doing things. I mean, Congress does nothing right now. They've been so ineffective in the past decade.
Well, for a while,
they've punted so much to the Supreme Court. They've punted so much to the executive branch. And now, I mean, the Biden administration was so sloppy and, again, also ineffective and unconstitutional in so many of the things that they did. And yet there was no checks on them for a long time.
Well, and the issue was not only is there no checks on them, but one of the bigger discussions that's been happening is what form of enforcement does the judicial branch have? Like, honestly, if we're going to be really honest, there's no enforcement. The judicial branch doesn't have an army or a military or anyone that
they
can
just say
arrest.
Things. Yeah.
They just like, and it's like the honor system, which is the way it should be that, okay, well, these are the rules of the game. This court ruled this way, which I agree with. And I think in a lot of things, in polling especially, like even though the administration has support for what they're doing with the deportations and with illegal immigration, there's not a ton of support with the perspective or the perception, I should say, that they are disregarding or not following judicial orders because the judiciary has no enforcement. The issue and the way it's different here is that in the past, when it happened with the Biden administration, you had the media who would carry water for the administration and defend them as to why they're not obeying judicial orders, as opposed to this time when arguably it's in a different, it's not necessarily even in a different category, because if someone had filed suit about the way that the Biden administration was abusing like the parole process, we might be in a different situation. But the point is that the media would still continue to cover for the Biden administration, as opposed to with the Trump administration, they're out here having countless segments on Abrego Garcia versus Rachel Morin and her murder.
So you're saying basically that the Supreme Court's having to move a little bit more quickly than they were accustomed to moving during the Biden administration because they've got a media that's like,
well, I mean, I think
come
they
on,
have
let's go.
Yeah.
And like I said, they're humans too. They're not these like mythical creatures that come on down, give us a ruling, and then float back up.
I don't even want to say it's necessarily that they're only being influenced by the media. I think it's multiple things. It's during the Biden administration, I think we should have challenged, and I don't even know, because I get most of my information, obviously, from news articles and from the media, and like somebody, like I see a headline and I go and I dig deeper. Did anybody file any kind of suits about how the Biden administration abused the parole?
Be a great question.
And then if they did, why didn't the media report on it?
Because how could that not have been addressed by the Supreme Court? I think it's really interesting that all of a sudden everybody is very, very, very interested in like judicial, not just review, but accountability, making sure that the courts, lower courts, federal courts, appellate courts, Supreme Court is all very involved in what Trump is doing, putting checks on him, making sure that he is lawfully using his executive branch power, which he should be.
Yeah.
But there's so much of this attention being given to that. When the last 4 years, Biden was just doing all kinds of stuff.
Well,
unchecked.
It wasn't Biden, and was it?
I know. Well, whoever the heck it was, that's still the big mystery. But I just think it's rich to me. It's wow. So now you care. I don't know.
I will see how it pans out. Clearly, this has to, the point is that it has put a pause on the biggest mechanism that the Trump administration has been using to deport criminal, illegal aliens. And I mean criminal as in like gang affiliated. This isn't even about
like super criminal. This isn't just I don't like the way these people look, or I don't, whatever people want to kind of fantasize in their heads. These are like dangerous humans that are inside the interior of our country in your community.
Yeah. And speaking of Abrego Garcia, anyone who was, we talked about this a little bit on the last episode. And if you guys didn't listen to our last episode, I highly recommend you go and listen to it, because we talked in depth about Kilmer Abrego Garcia and his history, the documents that were released by the administration and the allegations surrounding him. So to get background, I suggest that you listen to a previous episode. But at the time that we were recording, which was early in the morning on Thursday, the senator, Chris Van Hollen, was in El Salvador. And he had demanded, I think at the time that we recorded, he had already demanded to see Abrego Garcia, and he had been denied. And then that afternoon, we had, I found this entire situation fascinating. So later in the afternoon, pictures were put out of Senator Van Hollen meeting with Garcia at what looked like an El Salvadorian like resort. Honestly,
it looked lovely.
It looked nice. Like a good time. And so I have designated.
And Garcia was dressed in a fun little if I'm regular, remembering correctly, yeah, a Hawaiian pattern.
No, it was like a checkered shirt, but it was like multicolored. I think he had a Kansas City ball cap on, and he
looked very cash,
very
relaxed,
plumped and healthy.
Yeah.
And he sat down with, I think it was Van Hollen and also the vice president of El Salvador. And what I just side note, Van Hollen puts out a picture of him and Garcia
looking very,
very muted. And he looks very concerned. Yeah. And then you see Ukele put out a picture, multiple pictures of the meeting, of them shaking hands, of them sitting at the table. And his pictures were very bright. They had all of this color. It looked very tropical and friendly. Like
it did.
Like the contrast between the two posts, like to me was very telling on how this was a type of narrative battle. And of course, Bukele also included this caption of, here he is, alive and well, sipping margaritas in an El Salvador tropical paradise. While you have Van Hollen's post, was, I have finally met with Garcia and we talked about his family and his trauma of being abducted, like this whole talking point. But what ended up happening from the meeting is, so first of all, in case you guys don't know, Garcia was originally being held in CETCOT, which is the confinement center that we've all seen images from. Now he is in a lower security facility in Santa Ana. He's still in isolation.
Nobody is reporting on that, by the way.
Yeah, a few people. So now he's like in a lower security. He has his own room. He still doesn't have outside communication, except I'm assuming, well, I don't even know if he has communication with his attorneys. The point being is that Van Hollen basically admitted that he was alive because there was an entire conspiracy theory going around in Blue Anon circles, arguably, I'm going to say it, of him possibly being unalived or dead. I love how they like to say that's a censorship thing, and that nobody knew anything from him or where he was, which I thought was really funny how they kept saying nobody knows where he is or if he's alive, yet you have everybody's going to El Salvador knowing exactly where he is, demanding.
I think they wanted to be some kind of mysterious missing case, so it sounds more serious, but like they can attribute more malicious intent to whomever they'd want to, when really we know where he's at. Nobody's reporting on it, though.
Have noticed that since the release of the additional documentation from the administration, plus the evidence that his wife filed a protective order against him. And there has been this discussion about some tattoos on his knuckles that I've noticed that some of the Democrats are now starting to go, this isn't about Garcia. This is about due process. Like they're really trying, even though like you have Van Hollen like traveling all the way to El Salvador to go and meet him. So if you, one of the things that have been the discussion, first of all, you have the discussion about the Margarita Summit and the contrasting photos,
which I mean, like we said, we don't know if it's margaritas. We'll
no,
say, though,
I don't think it was margaritas. I think it was water. But it was.
And who cares? But there was cherries on the side of it.
Oh, there
like,
were?
Why are you putting cherries on? Yeah, it was on the side of the drinks. There was like little teeny cherries. Like, why would you do that? I don't know. It looks great.
Here's the deal. The entire thing, apparently, even Van Hollen was aware that the optics were not great. Okay. Because during his press conference, he held a press conference afterwards. And he was trying to make the argument of they weren't margaritas. We didn't even drink from them. They were just glasses there.
Now I just want to take a moment. I hadn't planned to do this, but as I was landing on the airplane, I got a transcript of some questions President Trump was asked at the White House today about what I would call Margaritagate. I don't know if you guys have been following this, but President Bukele, you know, after I met with Kilmar, did this tweet showing us at a table with these two glasses. So here's what happened. When I first sat down with Kilmar, we just had glasses of water on the table. I think maybe some coffee. And as we were talking, one of the government people came over and deposited two other glasses on the table with ice, and I don't know if it was salt or sugar around the top, but they look like margaritas. And if you look at the one they put in front of Kilmar, it actually had a little less liquid than the one in me, in front of me, to try to make it look, I assume, like he drank out of it. Let me just be very clear. Neither of us touched the drinks that were in front of us. And if you want to play a little Sherlock Holmes, I'll tell you how you can know that. So if you look at the video or the picture I sent out from the beginning of our meeting, you'll see there are no glasses on the table. So you'll see in later videos they are on the table. But they made a little mistake. For some people are very careful, right? If you sip out of one of those glasses, some of whatever it was, salt or sugar, would disappear. You would see a gap. There's no gap. Nobody drank any margaritas or sugar water or whatever it is.
Like he was trying, he became aware. Honestly, I think Bukele set him up. I think Bukele, because obviously the El Salvadorian government has complete control of where they're going to meet, how they're going to meet in the entire setup. Clearly, Van Hollen probably had someone take pictures, which is why there was one angle. And then you had Bukele releasing photos, which was in a completely different angle, different exposure, much brighter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think they set it up at this restaurant. I think it was maybe at the restaurant of the hotel that Van was staying at. Yeah. So it is clear to me that the El Salvadorian government had complete control of the entire theatrics of this situation. They probably set the table and everything. And Bukele, being a master troll, he took advantage of it and put it all out there for everybody to see. And was like, judge for yourself. He's well. Yep. He's drinking margaritas with a senator, knowing exactly like how the optics of that would look. So much so that when Van Hollen became aware, I'm sure by some aide, that this was the discussion that was happening online, he had to course correct and like damage control the margarita summit and be like, oh, well, we weren't really drinking anything, or that's not how it really was.
My favorite were like the comments from people. They would post the picture of Van Hollen like leaning over the table and staring at Garcia. And it was like, ladies, find you someone who looks at you how Van Hollen looks at Garcia. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of true. Like, he's just very leaning in, attentive.
He's so concerned.
And it was like, wow.
And he started doing the circuit on Sunday, on the Sunday shows. And it was all the same talking points. This is not, I'm not justifying the man. This is about due process.
Did you ask him if he has any association with MS-13?
I didn't ask him directly because he's answered that question repeatedly as his lawyers have. My purpose in going there was to, number one, see if he was alive, see if he was healthy, take his story. As I said, they have litigated this case on MS-13, and it was the judge in the most recent case who says, put up or shut up. So that's what I say to President Trump and others, put up or shut up.
Hearing these reports from Prince George's County Police and from the immigration judge and the appeals court in the immigration setting, do you worry, though, that you are sticking your neck out for somebody who maybe down the line is proven to be connected to MS-13?
I want to be very clear. I'm not vouching for the man. I'm vouching for the man's rights, his constitutional rights to due process. And the proper place to litigate that is in the courts, and the most recent federal district court judge that looked at this, Judge Zinnes, said that the administration had presented no evidence of his connection to MS-13, or by the way, to any other criminal gang or terrorist activity.
Okay.
So again, all the issues you raised, why aren't they presenting those to the courts? So again, put up or shut up in court, which is where we litigate these things.
Okay. Now, mind you, at the same time that Van Hollen is trying to do damage control on the Margarita Summit, you have, I don't know if you saw this, but you have Dems13 trending on Twitter.
I did not see that. What is happening? Was that over the weekend?
Yeah, it was over the week. I'm pretty sure it was over the weekend. So it was MS-13. So the joke then became Dems13 because it's DEMS-13. Mm-hmm. That started a trend all over Twitter or X. On top of that, people started to point out, it was like the most ridiculous talking point, which I thought was like, either people are completely idiotic or I don't even know how to describe this. So there was the president, Trump, had a photo of Garcia's knuckles. Now, Garcia's knuckles have four tattoos on them. I believe it is a marijuana plant, a smiley face, a cross, and a skull. So apparently these tattoos in that mm-hmm. sequence signify MS-13. So Trump,
really?
Yeah. So M okay, for marijuana, that. S for smiley face, one is the cross, and then I guess the three is the skull. I'm not sure exactly why, or maybe I might be getting it backwards. But regardless, he has the tattoos on his fingers. His wife has posted photos of them together in support of my husband or whatever, mm-hmm. strategically covering up his knuckles with like heart emojis. At the same mm-hmm. time, the president poses with a picture. And it is like when you're processing a criminal, you take photos of identifying markers yeah. on them. So he poses with this picture, and it's the picture of his knuckles, and it has his name on it. It's a close up. And then above the knuckles, it has MS-13 in a type font, which is clearly a type font because it matches the same type of the top of the picture that has his name on it. You had not intelligent people on social media saying that it was a doctored photo, pointing out that the MS-13 is not in pictures of him like at the summit and stuff like that, and that the administration was trying to misrepresent his tattoos by poorly photoshopping MS-13 on his knuckles, because apparently they don't understand mm-hmm. that was like an explanation and a designation. So this is like the entire discussion that is happening on social media over the weekend.
Oh my gosh, you guys, go to church. Dear word.
I know.
Get a hobby.
So after all of that discussion is happening over the weekend on social media on Sunday, now this was pre-planned. So even I think it was like before he left to El Salvador, he had already agreed to do interviews on the Sunday shows to talk about his visit to El Salvador, Van Hollen. So he makes the rounds on Sunday to talk about his meeting. He goes to ABC This Week, CNN, State the Union, Meet the Press, Fox News, all of them. And mm-hmm. a few interesting things were revealed. There was a lot of discussion about how this was paid for. This was paid for with taxpayer dollars, which he
admitted. Yeah, that infuriates me. I want to know how much I want to be taken out of his check. No, this is not your job. Like, I'm sorry.
Refund, please. You know,
I had so many people from Maryland specifically message me and be like, are we paying for this? And I told them I'm not exactly sure, but that should make his constituency furious.
So just so people know, because he's a senator, it's not at the same level as state representative. So it wasn't the state of Maryland that paid for his trip. This is federal taxpayer dollars.
So my money.
I mean, it's not better. I'm just saying, like, we all paid for this foolishness. Not
yeah, so
just
it's not
state
just Marylanders
Maryland.
Who get exactly. to be mad. It's
we all
us.
Get to be mad. Okay.
Yay.
So he admitted that it was taxpayer dollars. He also admitted, so Dana Bash asked him on CNN, like, did you ask him? Is he affiliated with MS-13?
Of course he didn't ask.
And well, he said, I did not ask if he was a member affiliated with MS-13. So he didn't even bring that up. He presented on ABC's This Week his mm-hmm. entire spiel, especially when he first came in, which I just look, even if you're trying to distance yourself from the man, because he was like, I'm not defending the man. I'm defending the rights of this man for due process, was one of his talking points, right? But then at the same time on ABC This Week, he lamented Garcia's trauma and his deportation. He categorized it as an abduction. Okay.
So what did Abrego Garcia tell you?
He told me about the trauma he had been experiencing, both in terms of the abduction and the fact that he was originally sent to CECOT, which is this notorious prison.
Yeah, we've
he
seen
He told me how much he missed his wife and his kids. He specifically mentioned his five-year-old boy who has autism because that boy had been in the car with him when U.S. agents had stopped them and handcuffed him and then taken him away. So he described all that, and he told me that he had moved recently to a new prison facility. So those are some of the highlights.
Wow. That is a stretch. Okay. Perhaps he could also classify when he was trafficking humans from one state to the other. Would he classify that as an abduction that Garcia played a role in?
Well, and that's my point. Look, bro. Van Hollen, let me advise you on the politics of this situation. Fine, mm-hmm. if you want to make this due process, make it due process, but make it due process by talking about the issue of due process. Don't go mm-hmm. down to El Salvador, have a margarita summit, and then come back to the United States, almost accidentally refer to him as an American, because that was the other thing. He was in the middle of an interview, and he was about to say an American, and he stopped himself. Okay.
No.
He paused, and he didn't. He said, and then he stopped. Fully aware that that is not the thing that you need to be saying.
I think at some point the president of El Salvador realized it was looking really bad to have this this person who had been absconded from America, from the streets of Maryland, in one of their prisons. Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, to categorize the deportation of an MS-13 gang member who beat his wife as an abduction, which, by the way, if the Biden administration had been doing their freaking job, the time that he was found to be driving without a driver's license, deportable.
Gone.
And even if you don't have to send him to El Salvador, that's the thing. Like, you just get him out. Send him out somewhere else. Now, I get there's logistics and there's a little bit more because obviously a country has to accept him.
Yeah.
But, or hold him in a detention center at a minimum.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For until you'll figure out the deportation. There's nothing out there that's saying that they couldn't hold him in a detention center. They just said they couldn't deport him to El Salvador. So the driving without a driver's license while trafficking individuals, the order of protection filed by his wife, which mm-hmm. by the way, like I would think at a minimum, fine, you want to let him drive without a driver's license, which is questionable in of itself. But if he's beating his wife, and he's an illegal, why, like that.
We have a lot here.
Yeah.
Like, we got a lot.
So all of this stuff of like his due process, which is another talking point that I don't necessarily get, because if I'm not mistaken, he went before two or three judges.
Correct.
Who found him to be MS-13 gang affiliated. In fact, he would not have this withholding order if he had not been before a judge and gone through some form of due process. So I
don't feel like Van Hollen and these other Democrat senators are thinking this through. Like, they are not doing what I think they want to be doing. They're not doing this case any favors by involving themselves and making themselves look as brainwashed as they actually are. Going on these shows, calling it an abduction, calling him an American, trying to get everybody to sympathize with him. The general American public is not on the side of that. And they may have questions about how this is being handled, but they're not there. They're not like, yeah, you're right. This poor American Maryland father was abducted. No, the more that comes out, the more everybody's kind of collectively, this guy shouldn't be in the country. We can discuss how they went about getting him out of the country and if we have disagreements on that. But this guy,
well, and I just don't
go in there. And there was another gal who is there right now.
There's four of them.
It's like a little delegation going to swoon over Garcia. You guys are so out of touch. They are so tone deaf to what Americans voted for in November and what overall Americans want. Again, people can argue about semantics, but almost no one wants people like this in the country if they really, really are honest with themselves. Now, I get that there's Democrats who are going to kind of be, what's the word, so passive and loosey-goosey. Well, but he's here and he had, whatever. I'm not talking about those types of people who clearly aren't.
They just have no spine, no backbone to speak against their own party.
They're just nervous to have any feelings that are resolute on anything. But I think the majority of Americans are like, what are you doing over there? You're an American. Stay in America. Do work for Americans. That's what you've been hired to do.
Well,
they're not
here
for all
this. Talking point here. So
maybe people in Oregon are, to be fair. Maybe that American center. They're like, yeah, sure, go. Human rights for everybody. American rights for everybody. It's like, that's not how it works.
Well, the delegation, quote unquote, that went down to El Salvador, they arrived yesterday. So today's Tuesday, so they arrived Monday. They're representatives from Arizona, Oregon, Florida, and California. Yasmin.
Oh, I didn't know Robert Garcia went. That makes so much sense. He was our mayor when we lived in California. This makes 1,000% sense. Yes. Yeah.
Well, totally. And then Maxwell Frost, who is a representative out of Florida, he's like the youngest representative member. I think he's like the first millennial or something like that in the House of Representatives.
Maybe. Great name, though. I love that name. Maxwell Frost. It's great.
He's so this perfect. Is a very, very progressive group that has decided to go down to El Salvador and demand to see Garcia because apparently the pictures from the Margarita Summit weren't sufficient for proof of life. They felt that they had to go down also. And so now the talking point here, oh, by the way, so they're going down as part of the House Oversight Committee. So they had to submit for request for funds for this trip from the House Oversight Committee. And Comer, who is the Republican and heads up the House Oversight Committee, was like, no, I'm not going to give you any money because this is stupid. So they went down actually on their own. They didn't really necessarily go down as a delegation from the House of Representatives. And so the claim is that the El Salvadorian government denied them a visit or any access or whatever with Garcia because they're not there in an official capacity. They're there as like random Americans essentially demanding.
And
to
who
see.
Paid for, did they have to pay for their own?
I believe they're paying. Yeah. I think they pay for it.
They probably started or, like a give send go or something.
But I do know that Comer was like, that is a waste of taxpayer dollars. It is not going to be coming out of the House Republican or the House like fund or the committee fund. So that, and I think that was kind of fun. But the talking point here, which there was a video that was going around from the Oregon representative, Maxine Dexter. The claim here is that because, which I think is not completely insane. Let me just give them a little bit of credit. It's not completely insane. The concern being that if you are an individual that gets swept up, quote unquote, in one of these deportations, because the administration is unwilling, this is how, and I'm putting this, I'm forming this as the talking point. This is not my opinion speaking necessarily, but that if they get swept up in the deportations and they get deported and sent to SETCOT or to El Salvador, that there is then no system or no way to fix that wrong and bring someone into the United States. Now, they have elevated that talking point to you could be a U.S. citizen that gets swept up into this and deported, and then you have no way to come back to the United States.
Congresswoman Maxine Dexter here, coming to you from El Salvador. I flew here last night with three of my colleagues to demand that Kiomara Borrego Garcia be released. He is being held in violation of a Supreme Court order expressly telling the Trump administration to effectuate and facilitate his coming home. That is being ignored. This is not just a threat to all people in the United States who could be illegally abducted, detained, and transported internationally against their will, but it is a fact that our president does not recognize the branches of government and the balances of power. This is what we all have been calling a constitutional crisis, yet it is more severe than anything we've seen. We cannot stay silent. We must stay loud. I am here because I refuse to wait for something to happen. We are here to release Kiomara Abrego Garcia.
I think that is a ridiculous and bogus talking point because I will give it to you that you might be an illegal migrant, which is, I'm not defending this. It is possible that you would be an illegal migrant who gets swept up into something like this and then ends up in SETCOT, which in the previous episode, I have expressed my concerns with that and my criticisms of that. But this claim that, oh, if they go and they deport an illegal migrant to El Salvador, the next one is you, I think is fear-mongering and I think is ridiculous. Because if you are a U.S. citizen, there is a plethora of documentation to provide evidence if need be, of you being a U.S. citizen.
Also, there's some really easy ways to avoid
getting deported in the first place.
Like, maybe don't traffic people. Maybe don't beat your wife. Maybe don't be part of a terrorist gang. I don't know. Just thoughts off the top of my head.
There's many, many things that you can do. But I just think, like, the talking point is that they've immediately elevated it to if they're doing this to people who are in the country illegally, who the government has a right to deport, then they could also do it to you as a lawful U.S. citizen. It makes no sense to me.
Nah, nope.
I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. Sit down. Calm down.
Yeah.
So I just don't necessarily get how this is going to be beneficial for the Democrat Party, because, you know, what you're doing, especially on this issue, what you're doing is you're providing material to the Republicans, especially for the midterms.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
it's like a gift.
Yeah, it's a gift. Because of the one issue that he is most popular on, which is what he is doing with deportations and illegal immigration. That is his number one issue. I don't think this concern, air quote, of due process, because I don't necessarily think the Democrats are really particularly too concerned with it. I think they're using this as a talking point to, again, anything that Trump is doing is bad. I think it's fair to criticize it, but like the ACLU is running around out there doing plenty and doing their job to defend when fought. Like, I don't feel like you need to put a senator or an official's face to the issue.
I know.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
It makes no sense to me. But the most progressive wing of the party is loving this stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, David Hogg was recently on with, I can't remember who it was. I don't know if it was CNN necessarily, but he was doing an interview because over the weekend he announced, now, if you are not familiar with David Hogg, he came to prominence after the Parkland shooting, a school shooting in Florida. And so I think he was graduating that year, and he made it a big, it was during that time, there was a small group of students that really got into political activism, especially regards to gun violence. That has been his platform. He frankly used that experience, this is my personal opinion, used that experience, got into Harvard. And he is an activist. And so recently, the DNC did a reshuffling of their leadership. And David Hogg was voted as vice chair, which that entire election process of the DNC, I think it is hilarious that they did this type of ranking voting where, like, you had to vote for someone who was, like, a minority person of color kind of class. Like, I think you had two votes, and one of those votes had to go to someone that was considered a minority
of some sort.
Yeah, a minority of some sort.
Basically a diversity hire.
Yeah. And then they still ended up with the most, like, two basic white guys, David Hogg being one of them.
That backfired.
It's like you do all of this, it still didn't work out. So he early in the week, I think maybe like Wednesday or Thursday, he has an organization, like a grassroots organization that's called Leaders We Deserve. And he announced as vice chair of the DNC that his organization was going to be investing, and he was hoping, up to $20 million to primary, quote, ineffective, asleep at the wheel House Democrats. And his definition of ineffective, like if you watch his videos or his interview, his definition of ineffective is old, essentially.
Yeah, this is so predictable and hilarious from that generation. Anything antiquated, traditional
must be bad.
And we see that in their, we see that in their voting patterns. We see that in their lack of church membership. We see that in their activism. Anything that is traditional is not just bad, but it's to be done away with. And this kid has no idea how politics works at all. And we're just going to get rid of all of the old Democrats. And us new Democrats are the leaders we deserve. And it's like, good luck. Like, you have zero clue how politics, how DC works, how state government works. These people have been in this business for good or for bad for years and years. And there is ways. This is a mechanism, like, he has no idea what he's doing, and he's going to burn so many bridges, first of all, the people that could actually make things happen for him, that could actually do some change, shuffle some things around in the DNC. He's going to isolate himself. Like, it's just dumb. He has no idea what he's doing.
Well, and I'm just like thinking about the politics.
So I say,
of
go
this.
Ahead.
I know.
Go,
I'm like totally
David
for this.
Yeah.
Because the politics of this, like in this interview, he goes and he points out, he specifically says, like, people like Senator Van Hollen, who are willing to stand up, and he's promoting what Van Hollen is doing.
Yep.
Which, the to me, the politics of that is like, if you end up with any, let's say he goes and he primaries some Democrats. Okay, this is a two-step mm-hmm. process. Because he's talking about, he was trying to present it as ineffective, but when you really listen to his entire interview, it's basically about age.
If they are the Democratic nominee, to make sure we're bringing in fresh faces to Congress. Right now, we talk about diversity all the time in Congress. One of the things we don't talk about as much in regard to that is age. Currently, if we had the same number of 25 to 30-year-olds in Congress as we do proportionally to the population, we would have over 40 people under the age of 30 in Congress. And I don't know if you've looked at Congress recently. We have one that is under the age of 30. That is not good for the future of the Democratic Party. President Biden was as successful as he was, I would argue, because he started when he was 29, which I know is hard for some younger people to believe. But if you look at FDR, if you look at LBJ, they started all before they were 30, and they became that successful because they were that young.
So
and right now, those
so
leaders don't have that
age
chance.
Thing.
Well, part of it is, but there's also the fact that a lot of our members of all ages, not just older people, there are older members that are meeting this moment. Like I said, like Congresswoman Pelosi, that has spent the past decade fighting back against Donald Trump. But there are members too, because it's not just a matter of age, it is a matter of effectiveness. People say, well, David, is this just out with the old and in with the new? I would say no. This is out with the ineffective and in with the effective, because we need members who are ready to meet this moment to fight back against Donald Trump. And what that looks like are people like Senator Van Hollen, who are literally going to El Salvador to say, this man needs to come back. It looks like people like Cory Booker.
So let's say he manages to primary some established Democrats, and he's not even like setting aside safe districts. He's saying like just anybody. He doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
So the point, because primary people would mean that you're going to get rid of someone who's probably been there for a while, which means mm-hmm. that they would be a safe bet. And he believes that because the district would be safe for Democrats, that you can just insert any Democrat and you would still win and you would be fine. And so his belief is that you would end up with a younger, more progressive Democrat. That is not the case, bro. Because let mm-hmm. me tell you, this most progressive wing of the party for the center is not popular. And the mm-hmm. center is who's going to win you this election. And if you don't think that someone who has two brain cells to rub together is going to be working mm-hmm. towards an like in an election, isn't going to point mm-hmm. out that you are the one who supported them and endorsed them, and that you're part of the, one of the most progressive wings of the party who went and supported and praised Van Hollen. Hello. Obviously, they're going to affiliate you with that. Like, I would be right. surprised if they didn't. And if they didn't, they would be stupid not to take advantage of that.
Well, so, we've talked about this before when he said, like, he got, let's talk about how he was criticized. First of all, James Carville, who I do love him sometimes. Again, what I like about James Carville, he's a bit like why I like, he's nothing like Justice Thomas, but he is consistent almost all of the time. James Carville is, he is the old guard and he is consistent. I don't agree with it. It's kind of like why I like Bill Maher sometimes. He's able to have complex conversations and think about things, but he's pretty consistent and he is honest. And I like that. James Carville calls Hogg a contemptible little twerp. He says, I don't know if I have standing, but I might give the DNC $10 to sue him. He's a contemptible little twerp, if you ask me. And then House Speaker Jeffries, when asked about Hogg, said, I look forward to standing behind every single Democratic incumbent. So this is what I get from this. And we've talked about this on previous episodes. So once Hogg starts getting like, realizing that he is a small, small, small fish in a very big pond, and he is not as important as he thinks he is, and he doesn't have as much power, and he doesn't know what he's talking about, he had to come out and clarify that it's about effectiveness and not age. He said, we need people, regardless of their age, that are here to fight. But what he's missing is what exactly we have pinpointed in previous episodes. It's not that these people aren't willing to fight. They are willing to fight tooth and nail.
Oh, and
they
dirty, by the way. All,
yeah, dirty. They don't know what they're fighting for. These Democrats do not have a blueprint. They don't know what their positions on things are. They don't know what things they're going to major on and what things they're going to minor on. They don't know what's important to them as a party. They've abandoned their base. they have no clue how to proceed. So it's not a lack of will. They want nothing more than to take down the Republican Party so bad they can taste it. They just don't know what they're fighting for. And that right there outlines that he has no idea what he's talking about. He's like, we need fighters. And it's like, you have fighters. You have tons.
And
you
fighting
just don't
for
have a party.
What? That's the issue.
Yeah, you don't have a cohesive party anymore at all. That's where you're like, oh, sweet summer child, you're 5 years old and you think you understand the world of politics because you got into Harvard, which, by the way, has 0% dissent for you to even consider another viewpoint.
Well, and it's not by David that, Hogg but in your he hair. Thinks, like, he has been praised and propped up ever since the tragedy in Parkland. And so he's used that to basically ride the wave into this vice chair position.
Exploited it. Sorry.
And I guarantee you that they gave him, like, this position was kind of, because he was the young progressive. So, like, to give a crumb to the progressive wing, the younger wing of the DNC, he gets elected. Mm-hmm. The head of the DNC, the chair, Ken Martin, reportedly is not loving this idea and is exploring removing David Hogg from the vice chair position. You have multiple Democrat officials, including four members of Congress, who have privately expressed frustration with Hogg and are threatening to also promote taking him out. And they're really upset with him bankrolling or wanting to bankroll, like, their opposition. Think about this. You have House members who you think they're not going to work together to take you out when you're threatening their job. Are you, like, this is
like, they're calling in like Nancy Pelosi. Let's go get us a strategic plan here to get this kid out of the business.
And look, Nancy Pelosi might be old. She might be using a walker right now.
She knows exactly what she's doing, though.
Cognitively, she is well. She is fine. And that is really all you need. So I don't know. Like, this whole thing, I think it's also really telling that he thinks that this is all you need. You just need younger people who are willing to fight, as if he isn't adding to this circular firing squad that is currently going on in the Democrat Party. And look, I am here for it right now. At the end of the day, if they can't get their shiz together and this is what they're going to keep doing, go for it. Yeah. I'm all for it. Go ahead and because I feel pretty confident that if he were to manage to get younger, more progressive people in, it's not a done deal. All right. You're not going to, it's not to say nobody will win, but it's not a done deal.
Yeah. As someone who would like a healthy two-party system in our country, if David Hogg is the wake-up call for some of these Democrats to be like, okay, we need to cut out this nonsense.
Back to the center.
We need to get it together. We need to get back towards the center and figure out what we actually are doing here, what we stand for. I mean, I support that, because right now that party is off the rails. They are just floundering, and they're
the longer they stay off the rails before the midterms,
the better it is.
The better it is. So I think that was fascinating. So now let's go ahead and start wrapping us up, because there's some earmarks that we want.
We got some earmarks,
and we got a lot of them. With the first one, because
rapid fire.
I had questions.
Kristi Noem's purse was stolen in D.C. First earmark: the Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem had her purse snatched while dining in Washington D.C. on Easter night. The bag had her driver's license, passport, DHS badge, blank checks, and about $3,000 in cash she planned to use for family holiday fun with her kids and grandkids. Noem confirmed the theft at the White House Easter egg roll, saying it's still unresolved. This is a reminder of the crime issues plaguing even our nation's capital. The real story here, though, is, ma'am, why do you have $3,000 in
cash?
That's
what I think.
And why, what do you mean it's for family holiday fun for your kids and grandkids? Don't even tell me your kids are finding Easter eggs full of hundreds.
$100?
What is going on?
Well, and that was one of the things I posted that in my stories. I'm like, okay, my question is, why do you have $3,000 in your purse? A purse, by the way, that I'm sure probably costs $3,000. Do you know what I mean?
Like the purse being stolen in DC, not a surprise.
Not a surprise.
Like, I'm in DC often, and I feel like, just don't leave your purse sitting on the ground. You hang that sucker up and you put your leg against it, or you just keep it on your body at all times. The real story is, what are you doing with $3,000, Kristi Noem?
Well, and okay, I'm not even saying, because people, I posted it in my stories, and are you insinuating? I'm not insinuating anything.
It's not insinuating anything. I'm saying she rolls big. Like, I'm not insinuating anything nefarious. I'm just saying that woman has money to blow if she has three
rolling around in Washington D.C. with $3,000 in her purse. Shut up.
No, bye. Second earmark. Sadly, Pope Francis passed away yesterday. It was reported Pope Francis, the first Latin American pontiff, he died at 88 on April 20th from a stroke and irreversible heart failure, according to the Vatican doctor. His final days, as many of you saw on social media, included he was the day before he passed, he was at the Easter Sunday meeting, or he was out offering Easter blessings to the people in Rome. He also met with Vice President J.D. Vance, who was a recent Catholic convert, and he met with him at the Vatican, gave him a rosary as a gift. Yesterday at the Easter egg roll, President Trump ordered U.S. flags both at the state and federal level to be flown at half staff in his honor, calling him, quote, good man, close quote. The Catholic Church is in mourning right now. It'll be in mourning. I think it's for either nine days,
I believe. Nine days.
And then the Catholic Church will hold a conclave to elect a new pope. And Trump is going to be attending the funeral, and that will be on Saturday.
I think the last conclave was in 2013. So it's been, it'll be interesting to follow for sure.
It will. And if you are wondering, like, how do they pick a pope? There are numerous articles online that you can Google, like, what happens next? Because there's a very tight process how they do that. I found a good one on Washington Post with an infographic. I love those. So
yeah, and there's a lot of speculation on who's going to be next. Actually, Pope Francis was one of, if not the most progressive pope for the Catholic Church in like ever. And so there's a big question about who's going to be chosen next, because there is a large contingent of the Catholic Church that is leaning much more conservative.
And there's a huge influx of young people into the Catholic Church in the last like 4 or 5 years.
That are much, much more traditional. So
as I mentioned, the White House Easter egg roll was yesterday, and it was so much fun to watch online. I actually really liked watching the footage. I knew quite a few people there, and I was mad that I was not invited, just FYI, to the administration. So there was about 40,000 folks that were invited to the South Lawn. Trump praised the National Park Service and Melania for a beautiful event, saying Easter is one of our favorite days. And he did mention that religion is coming back in America. And yeah, I thought it was just sweet to watch. There's so much history that goes into, like,
did you see him coloring? Like, he looks so grandpa.
Yeah, he is so grandpa. And it's, you can't not love that. He was sitting there and coloring on these coloring sheets with the kids. And then, of course, he was like taking a Sharpie and signing his name in the middle of the coloring sheet.
But he's like, I can really get into this.
Yes, he was. And then he also was like dancing on the side lawn for like the people who were spectators and weren't invited.
So I have a question for you. This Easter egg roll was a little bit different because I was looking into how it is typically paid for, and it is through donations. Mm-hmm. It isn't like taxpayer funds that pay for this event. Mm-hmm. But this time there were corporate sponsors like out and about, in the sense of like branding was present at the Easter egg roll. And a lot of Democrats looking always to criticize something were not loving that. Do you have an opinion on that? Or I'm just curious.
No, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's like, fine. If it's not like, I'm a big capitalist fan here. So I think, you're a corporate sponsor. You want to be a corporate sponsor. You want to give money for an event to keep it going. I mean, it was shut down for 2 years during COVID. Keep it going. I think that was great. And it really definitely had a different air about it. I mean, it was fun. And the last couple of years, I mean, remember last year, Joe Biden was like being wandering around, being guided.
Well,
by
and then
Easter
it was also
Bunny
around the same
like
time that they did Trans Day of Visibility.
It was and that was on Easter Sunday that they announced that with their like trans flags all over the White House website and stuff like that. And then I think it was the year before that an actual transgender
like flash
was there
on the
flash
on the lawn
with his fake
boobies.
So I think anything that happened yesterday was an upgrade.
This bunny, the bunny that was at this Easter egg roll,
he looked
was
way better.
So cute than the one last year's was kind of creepy and looked like it had been rented over at the Party City that just shut down.
I don't have a problem with corporate sponsors. The American Egg Board wants to sponsor. I think it's great.
So something that happened over the weekend, which I had no clue about, was there was more hands-off protests over the weekend.
No, they weren't hands-off. It was 50501, which stood for 50 cities, 50 protests, one movement. So it's the name of the organization. And it's another anti-Trump organization. And their goal was to get 11 million participants, which is like 3% of the American population, to come out for these protests. And they were on Holy Saturday and some of them on Sunday, I think, which is hilarious.
They meet their goal?
Like, I don't know. Don't care. But they're talking about how this is like a big movement against Trump. And then Republicans are like, okay, you're fringe.
I had 3% is not in.
I had no idea either until I saw someone did some reporting on it, because there were a lot of signs calling for the assassination of Trump, which is just, again, it goes right back to what we were talking about in the last week about this actual violent streak that the Democrat Party needs to deal with within their party. Like, it's a problem. And how if that had been the same case with a bunch of anti-Biden or pro-Trump rallies calling for the assassination of President Biden.
Yeah,
can you
absolutely.
Imagine?
Hello.
Can you imagine? People, ever-loving minds would have been just like exploding.
Yeah. If you guys want to hear our thoughts on that, it was in the last Unfiltered episode, which we actually made public to everyone last week.
It was good. And it's important. Yeah. Like, really important.
Okay. Yeah, so I had no idea. I know when I looked it up, it was like Mother Jones was reporting that they were everywhere, that everyone was.
Of course,
and I was
they're
like,
everywhere if you're looking for them. Yeah.
Literally had no idea.
I know. Yeah. I didn't until I saw a bunch of signs of, like, basically 86-47, kill Trump signs and kill Elon, burn it all down, fascist scum, like all this stuff. So a really delightful.
It's such a unifying group of people.
Yeah. Well, and that's the funny part is, like, when you hear what the one was like describing their movement as, I was very targeted against, like, basically deportation and anti-Elon Musk. But then you look at the footage, the videos and the pictures coming out of the protests, and it's, you got some Ukrainian flags over here, you've got the Palestinian flag being waved over here, you have LGBTQ signs, you've got hands off signs, you've got death to Trump, death to Elon. It's everything. It's just all the things. It's climate activists against Trump. There's 45 movements in one movement. And so I don't know if it necessarily achieved what they were hoping for, but we'll see if these keep. Because, I mean, this is the second week of protests. There was the hands-off protest the week prior. So I don't know. I don't know how long they're going to keep all these going.
Mm-hmm.
Next earmark, Klaus Schwab steps down from the World Economic Forum. So the 87-year-old founder of the WEF announced his resignation as the executive chairman on April 15th, and it'll be effective at the next meeting in January 2026. Schwab, obviously known for pushing the Great Reset idea, he's going to transition into a non-executive role with, help me with this name. Why would I ask you to help me with this?
Yeah, like Borge Brende
is taking over. Sorry, we don't know.
I have no idea who this guy is. I don't know if this guy is better. I don't know if he's worse. My assumption is, like, because a lot of people are like, Klaus Schwab is gone from the WEF. Look, you don't know.
Come on. Yeah,
you have
exactly.
no idea. The organization of itself is questionable. This is a globalist agenda organization. If you think that Brendan or whatever his name is,
I have no idea.
If you think that he's going to suddenly like be anti-global.
No, that's not going to happen.
My breath on this one.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens with that. But goodbye, Klaus. And then finally, for our final earmark, the New York Times alleges Hegseth shared sensitive info again. So the New York Times, this is completely predictable, claimed on Easter Sunday that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth shared details of a March Yemen airstrike in a private signal chat with his wife, brother, and lawyer. Hegseth and the White House call it, quote, fake news from disgruntled former employees, close quote, insisting that no classified info was shared. Trump backed Hegseth yesterday at the Easter egg roll, saying he's doing a great job. Caroline Levitt.
She was, you know, like, because there was that claim that he was going to get replaced or he was going to have to. And Caroline
NPR,
like,
I think,
not.
Was the one who said we have insider knowledge of the White House that they're trying to.
Look, I am hearing multiple claims, and it's really hard to figure out, like, who's being disgruntled and who is actively moving against Hegseth, and then whether or not they're valid, which is what is so freaking annoying. Because let me tell you, if Hegseth is not doing a good job, if he is being irresponsible, if he is not capable of being in this position, I want to know. But The fact is that it's coming from people who are either disgruntled employees or media that you can't necessarily trust because they misrepresent the facts. As soon as this broke, the New York Times put it out. Everybody was picking it up.
Yep.
I don't know what to think. Now, there is some, like, I was watching Mark Halpern recently on The Two Way, and he is someone who I think is fair. And someone who I trust more.
He's pretty measured.
Yeah. Than like the New York Times. And he has pointed out that there is some conflict, chaos, concern about the way the security team in of itself, not specifically just Hegseth and the DOD, but we're talking about, oh my gosh, I forgot his name. The one that started the Signal chat, the National Security Advisor. My brain just went shut down. Mike Wolf. Jeez.
This is fun.
And you guys can't even see me. I'm literally almost doing charades over here with my... Okay. So there's like claims and concerns about like Mike Wolf, even Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, and then the envoy too, Steve Witkoff, like that general security kind of like group, that there's concerns and conflict within that group because of management styles.
Hard to know what stuff is spun up and what's not. And I don't believe, I'm not saying I don't believe that it could have happened. What I'm saying is if you want to come out with this kind of like bombshell reporting, then show us what it is. I want to see it like I saw the other Signal chat.
Let's exactly. Share it. And I think that's the issue. It's like, I'm not saying like this can't be the case, but also I don't trust you. Also,
then show me what it is. Yeah.
You've misrepresented things in the past. There's clearly a move against Hegseth. There has been from the very beginning. Yeah. I don't know what their obsession is. So yeah, don't necessarily trust you.
He came out yesterday at the Easter egg roll, Pete Hegseth. And because the media was there asking him, and he was like, look, you guys did this before. You're doing it again. It's some upset employee. And you don't hold anybody accountable in the last election for any of this stuff. And now you have me and this is all fake. It's fake news. So I just want to see if they're going to keep releasing this kind of stuff, then show us what it is. And I want to see it.
And then just kind of like,
yeah, I need receipts. But I also am like, look, if we're going to get upset about a husband involving his wife where she need not be involved, we could have some discussions about Joe Biden and his wife, maybe. I don't know. Just a thought.
Well, and I also want to know the details. By the way, and I had to dig into this further, but I'm just kind of like putting it out there for if anybody's curious and wants to get ahead of the game. I think, if I'm not mistaken, this brother that they're claiming was in this chat, I think he has some kind of...
He has military background.
Yeah.
He has some clearance of some sort.
He has some kind of clearance. He has some kind of military background, or he's like in national security, DOD.
You cannot count on.
And also, let's remember what the war plans were last time that suddenly turned into not war plans.
Not so war planning.
Less war planning.
Details, Miss Sadie.
Details. Yeah. So that's it for today's episode of Rivera and Reese.
We made it.
So that's it for today's episode of Rivera and Reese. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If this is your first time here, make sure you hit that follow button, recommend it to a friend, leave us a 5-star rating and a comment, because we love comments. We love reviews. If you want to join the chat, literally, consider becoming a paying supporter where we have exclusive subscriber-only chats. You get ad-free episodes. You get bonus episodes, all kinds of goodies. All right. Also, we have recently, both of us, there's two daily newsletters. Rachel has the Dawn Dispatch, where she provides a little bit more information, background, why is this important about headline breaking news. If you want it simple, if you want it straight, if you want maybe different types of stories, Rivera and Reese also has a R&R daily brief, which is literally just, this is the headline, this is the summary, this is the video or the article that you can watch or read if you want more. Mm-hmm. Very simple. So if you don't want to be doom scrolling, I recommend that you sign up for both of those. And that's it. So make sure you click that link in the show notes, sign up to become a paying supporter and support Rivera and Reeves. We're done for today's episode. We'll see you again on Tuesday. Nope. We'll see you again on Thursday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. In the meantime, I think we have proven again in another episode that the media is trash.
Yet again.
And we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.